A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Union Digital Bank, a fully digital bank with a mission to empower every Filipino everywhere by providing easy access to digital financial services for consumers and businesses. Union Digital Bank partners with startups to co-create financial products to meet the needs of their customers. Contact Union Digital Bank to explore how they can power your platform with embedded financial services. For more information about Union Digital Bank, please see their website at www.uniondigitalbank.io. Stay updated by following them on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Also by Shoppable Business, your number one source for procuring products for your business in the Philippines. Discover authentic branded products online. Shop bulk, save big, and secure authentic products with official sales invoices at Shoppable Business today. And also brought to you by DragonPay. DragonPay is the pioneer in alternative payments in the Philippines. DragonPay is the reigning fintech of the year in last year's Philippine Fintech Festival. Sign up now at www.dragonpay.ph.
You know exactly who to invest in if the founder has many stories about their conversations or interactions with would-be customers or prospects. In fact, that's the only thing as a founder that you need to be able to do early on, which is to keep on talking to customers and then getting those insights and then putting it into your product.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share podcast. It's our fifth anniversary season and it's February already as we're already releasing this. And man, during our anniversary season, it's not just any random anniversary season. This is the time when we bring in the heavy hitters. And it starts today because we got one of them as we will be talking about the hustle behind FDev and all the other hustles that he's involved in. Because this guy has a lot of hyphens in him. But without further ado, let's welcome to the show Mr. Xavier Marzan of FDev.
Hey guys, Xavier, happy to be here.
There you go. Again, we've been 3 years? This is 3 years in the making.
I know, long time coming.
Yep. I remember meeting you in the middle of the pandemic, or at probably the start of the pandemic. It's like, man, I got to have this guy on the show, former CEO of GCash. That's all I knew. And then you talked about, I met you as an angel investor at that point on, and you were just literally, I think, just starting out with FDev.
Right.
But before I get carried away, Xavier, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. Xavier, what's your hustle?
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Thanks again, Ron, for having me. All right. What's my hustle? So I have two answers to that. Number one, obviously, is FDev.
Okay.
So our mission today is to help digitally transform enterprises, right?
Nice.
That is a hard thing to do, especially, you know, in an emerging market like the Philippines, where most businesses are actually lagging behind digital transformation, right? So that's one hustle that we're working on. And then the other is, you know, I've always been very involved in the startup ecosystem, right? So I'm still sort of collaborating, advising with a lot of startup founders in tech, obviously, and helping them get from zero to seed or zero to
one. There you go. Amazing. Again, we're going to be discussing that this is going to be one of the amazing episodes, I can already tell. But before I get carried away, Xavier, I need you to buckle up real quick, because this can be a bumpy ride a little bit, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. Now, again, this is always the most interesting part, because no hustler has done it on his own and did not go and scrap and claw like any majority of us. Now, I want to understand, Xavier, again, we always talk about hustling as the finished product. You're a finished, or at least a very solid product now. But I want to understand the origin point of you coming through hustling, right? What was that like growing up? What was the very first inspirations or exposure that you had in hustling early on in your life?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Ron, I grew up in the Philippines, right?
Nice.
Despite, you know, some U.S. accent here and there, you know, like I was born here, went to undergrad here. And then after graduation, which is actually towards Internet 1.0, right?
Okay.
It was around that time.
.com.
And not only that, right? It was almost during the dot-com bubble bursting.
Ooh.
Right?
During, before, or after?
Just before.
So, okay, so well, okay, so what, that. Let what me, was that like?
Yeah, let me just quickly go through that. So I started out in management consulting, right? With Accenture, did that for a couple of years.
Nice.
Then actually put up my own digital agency back then. So this was early 2000s. I was already hustling as an entrepreneur, trying to scale up, which was then a relatively new idea.
Which
in providing digital services to traditional advertising agencies. Obviously today, well, when you talk about a digital agency, you know, like probably it's a dime a dozen.
Right.
But back then, a lot of traditional agencies have not heard about, you know, things like email marketing, SMS marketing, you know,
websites,
right? So we were really early. So did that for several years, actually, until I went to the US, right? But my first inspiration in tech actually came from my work doing management consulting, because a bunch of the client engagements that I worked with were all related to tech.
Okay.
And immediately I saw how tech can actually impact not only a large enterprise, government, but also, you know, the lives of individual people. So that was my first foray into tech, right? And of course, with my own digital agency back then, sort of went into the trenches, nuts and bolts with, okay, how is tech implemented in different organizations, right?
Got it.
But at the same time, you know, we also have personal ambitions, right? It just so happened that mid-2000s, right, my wife was also seconded to the U.S. To do work there. And then at the same time, I was thinking about going to graduate school. So I think timing-wise, it just so happened that we were lucky enough to go to the U.S. For both work and studies. Right. Got
it. And I saw it on your LinkedIn. You're a Blue Devil. There you go. You're a Dookie. There you go.
Yeah. So I'm blue-blooded. Blue-blooded. Yeah. Blue Eagle. And then
Blue Eagle Devil. And Blue Dead. And then there's this one guy who have. Oh yeah, it's the guy from Mosaic. He's the UNC guy. So it would be nice to have you guys both. Brett Doyle. Brett Doyle is a UNC grad, and you being a Dookie, I'd love to have you both in a room.
Yeah, sure. There's a few Dookies as well here in the Philippines, and also in tech.
Oh, amazing. But I want to understand before we talk about you migrating and, of course, hustling in the US, because that's a totally different grind, right? Hustling here, being an entrepreneur.
Yep.
It's double the hustle when you go to the US. But at the very first starts, again, a lot of entrepreneurs, when they come in, they don't get it at the first try. There's relatives, flashes of success.
Right.
But a lot of the most successful founders, let's just call it what it is. Fuck it up in the first try, right? What were the challenges you had to go through? Because you're very, very early in your time, right?
Right.
Digital agency. What does that even mean in the 90s?
People didn't even know. So
what were the challenges you had to go through?
To be honest, initially, our client roster were all based out of Silicon Valley. Because some of my partners were also based out of California, right? And you know, we started it late 2000s. So obviously come 2001, you know, the pipeline actually dried up, right? So we had to pivot, right, in a big way. I still didn't know what pivot was back then. We still didn't
know that doing term, it.
But what we said was we needed to survive. Right. And we tried to leverage on the same skill sets that we had internally. We had our own dev team, et cetera. And just focused on emerging market or Southeast Asia based clients. Right. And, you know, we grew in an amazing way back then because our clients were brand names, right? From, you know, BMW to Microsoft, HP. Even Shell, etc. So a lot of enterprises from Singapore, Hong Kong, right, who wanted to get into this digital realm, right? Again, this was the first version of it. But we helped them do that, right? And you know, at the end of the day, and this was also one learning, right? You need to get the right people on the bus. You need to have the right partners. Unfortunately, after I think it was 5 to 7 years of doing it, right? And growing the organization. We decided to close shop because the other partners had different priorities.
Yeah. And it's hard. And like what I said, I always been saying this, and I credit Simon Sinek saying this, or I forgot who I got it from, that startups is a team sport. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how brilliant you are. Even if you think you're LeBron James of the whole thing, if you surround yourself with people who are not all in or is a mismatch with your skill set, magic won't happen. What you're going to end up feeling like is that you're literally pulling everybody in the back. You're going to feel like Atlas, that the whole world is with on your shoulders, but you can only do so much to save.
It's hard to do that. Right, it's always about the team. Right. Together, everyone achieves more.
Exactly. That's correct. Now, all right. Now let's talk about the US grant. So now you're in the US.
Yep.
You're studying. And at the same time, when people study there, most of the time it's you're studying and working at the same time. It's hard to just study and not do anything else in between. So one thing I'm now looking at here is that you went to Duke. And the very first thing that I see in your LinkedIn is the AOL grant.
Yep.
You were in the Empire State of Mind in New York City, being the director of corporate strategy and development. Walk us through how you got into that path.
Wow. Yeah. So back then, going through business school, the space that actually intrigued me the most was venture capital, right? So I actually went through a lot of courses, classes around venture capital, M&A, restructuring, etc. But obviously, VC back then was like a white boys club, right?
Yep.
And you know,
exclusively, still is right now.
exclusively for you know, one or two, so graduates of one or two business schools, right?
Correct.
But I wanted to get exposed to the space, right? So
okay.
I think I was also lucky enough to find an opportunity working within the Time Warner Group, right? I mean, big conglomerate wow. media, right? And, you know, lucky enough, I was also assigned to work on the internet division, which back then was AOL, and everything related to AOL. That was also the time when we were transitioning the organization from just subscription and infrastructure and bandwidth and broadband into things like content, online advertising,
yep.
ad tech.
AOL Music. Right? So, there you go.
So I did, yeah. So I was involved in a lot of global initiatives, but primarily to invest and acquire startups that would augment the group's capabilities, right? So we did, my sweet spot was transactions between $25 million to $50 million, right? So teams.
This is 2006 to 2010. That's yeah. a huge chunk.
Yeah. So, and we worked with founding teams of about 10 to 30 people, okay. right? And that's actually where, and I love working with founders, right?
Of course.
And their teams. It just gives you a lot more energy, new perspective of the world, right? And, you know, working and learning from those founders and CEOs of these tech startups just brought me a lot of insight into, you know, number one, how can we help grow the startup ecosystem in the Philippines, right? Mm-hmm. And then secondly, what do these startups need in terms of funding and investments, right? And I've always, you know, Ron, I've always had this mindset of coming back to the Philippines. It was just a question of timing, right?
Got it.
And, you know, my wife and I wanted our kids, right? They were born in the US, but we wanted them to grow up here in the Philippines to get to know the culture and our values, right? And also be able to make an impact here in the Philippines. And that's why, you know, after working for several years doing investments, M&A with startups for a global organization, you know, decided to come back, which was about 10 years ago already.
Yep. And that's what we're going to be talking about. But I just want to go deeper here on this grind real quick, because what I want to find out, when you are acquiring and assessing startups and the startup founders that you,
right.
you again, that you're probably scouting to acquire for AOL,
yep.
right? And especially with the background in the VC hat that you had, what I want to understand is, did it really change from how VCs assess founders before or to founders now? I'm pretty sure there's things that are the same and things that change. But what was the mindset like, or what was that process like in really doing DD for each startup that you would probably consider even acquiring?
Yeah. So great question. So the mindset, the perspective that we took as part of a large global organization was, how can the startup help us, right, in achieving our broader ambitions, right? And the ambition back then was for the Time Warner Group, right, obviously media empire, is to get from being sort of a giant in the offline media space, traditional media space, into the tech-enabled media space, right?
Yep.
So, you know, driving social media, things like that, digital media, communities, et cetera, and even online advertising. So when I was in the US, I would actually consider myself to be an ad tech expert, right? That's where I started, right? And you know, there are I can talk about that later as well, because obviously I had to transition from that expertise in ad tech to being fintech, right?
Yes. But yeah, that's such an amazing grind. And you know what I love about your journey this early on is that when you people come through, you went to the US with the sheer intention of going back. Mm. Because let's admit it. I'm going to the US literally as we're recording this. I'm going tomorrow.
Yep.
Right. And I've met a bunch of Filipinos there, but there's this kind of Filipino, whether it's first gen or second gen, when they migrate, this is what's sad. What's sad is there's a certain brain drain that happens.
Yes.
That you're still Filipino, but you don't want to come back anymore. Like, that's behind me. I'm never coming back. But you had that mindset. Why?
I think at the end of the day, we wanted to leave some form of a legacy, right? And to me and my wife, that legacy is not in the US, right? It's back home. It's back home in the Philippines, right?
Yes.
It's where like most of our family is. I have to admit, like half my family, both sides of the family, right? Mothers and fathers are also in the US. And I hear this stuff all the time, which is, you know, I don't want to come back anymore. I've heard it since I was young, right? But to me, instead of saying something like that, right? To me, the answer is always, sure, there are lots of challenges being here in the Philippines, right? Traffic, et cetera, government, et cetera. But instead of just having your back face it, right?
Correct.
You face it head on, right? And say to yourself, hey, I want to do something about it, right? No matter how hard it is, no matter if you don't actually succeed in doing it, as long as you do something about it.
Yeah, it's active participation. And that's what's missing. Because what's sad, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong. Because hey, circumstances are all different,
of course,
right?
Of course.
If you have a better opportunity to have a better life somewhere else, and you escape all the stuff that you have to deal with here, why the hell not? But what I admire so much, people who have that choice but choose to come back and be an active participant in solving the problem, right? Because just imagine how much amazing Filipino talent are out there, but they're not here.
That's right.
Right? That's why the sea turtles, the ones that are the people that have acquired great experience overseas, just like you, that came back and starting companies, mentoring other people, especially the locals, the ones that don't even have the opportunity to get access to the type of stuff that you guys access, get access on, is just amazing. And that's paid it forward. And that's what led you to now start going back. And I want to understand. So now you came back and you got into GCash. Obviously, you became CEO at one point. But what drew you back and why GCash?
So probably a year before coming back, right? I already started to give feelers to some companies here locally, right? And, you know, I even spoke with a lot of the quote-unquote owners of the different conglomerates, right?
Got it.
But obviously, I wanted to make sure that I work in tech, right? And back then, you know, 10 years ago, there weren't a lot of choices back then in terms of, you know, the technology space. But telco, right, was actually equivalent to tech,
right? Yes.
Back then.
Yes.
So, and, you know, I met up with this amazing person who was with Globe before, Peter Bethos, right? He was previously the chief operating advisor for Globe, right? And he focused on the consumer side. And I would actually credit him, right, as the engine behind Globe's turnaround, right, into becoming a market leader, right? Yep. So I joined his team, right? And, you know, I worked on several special projects initially because I also wanted to get back into, obviously, the Philippines, getting to know the culture again, what the trends are, right? How's the market going? So I worked on several different things. And one of the things that I worked on was actually LTE investment, right? So the very first LTE investment in the Philippines was part of my baby, right? And I remember piloting LTE, right? It's not very similar though to startups when we say pilot, right?
Yeah.
But
that's an infra play though.
Yeah, this is spending millions of dollars already just to put up a few dozen LTEs, right? But it started in Rockwell.
Yeah, I remember vividly. I forgot who I was discussing with, but 3G was the norm back then. Like, oh my God, I'm so mayabang. I have 3Gs at one point. But then LTE became the thing, and it was only available in certain pockets within BGC, Makati, around that area. You only get that.
Highly urban areas.
And highly dense also.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that was you. So thank you. Because if not, we would be stuck in the dark ages with bad internet and we can't even load anything. So, wow. What was the prep and what was the grind like?
Oh, wow.
Getting that out.
Yeah, very, very, very different from sort of software.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, you had to go through a lot of investment committee discussions, right? Your typical big CapEx investment. But... Right. You know, that also actually helped me appreciate how to work with boards, how to work with external shareholders, right? Because you had to onboard them on a lot of your key decisions, etc. And again, that was working with this guy, Peter Bifas, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
And how did that then lead to the path of FinTech?
Exactly. Yeah. So, when I joined Globe, right, Peter and I already had this discussion where, you know, after about a year and a half, I would already join one of the tech subsidiaries, right? And obviously, given my ad tech background, I had thought that I would actually help lead one of the content or digital media subsidiaries. And you know of a few of them, right?
Yep.
They're still there today, right? So that's what I thought. Then when the time came when we were choosing, actually they were choosing where to sort of rotate me, they said, hey, you know, there's this little company called GCash.
What?
Which, you know, we've had since way back when.
Right.
And it was primarily sort of an international remittance play, right? Sending through SMS. We want to refresh that business, right? And, you know, we needed someone who can actually work and shift the organization's mentality, right, into something that is startup-like, right? Mm-hmm. Because number one, you had to refresh the organization. Number two, including the culture. And number three, you had to develop new products.
Wow.
So that was the start of the shift, right? And to be honest, a lot of the people who I worked with back then, you know, some of them are still working with me today.
That's amazing.
That was quite an intense experience as well, right? We were developing new products, right?
Yep.
For example, like obviously before was primarily SMS and actually
USSD. GCash was an SMS thing.
USSD
didn't have an app.
Right. And I also thought, hey, wallet, you know, the concept of a digital wallet, people don't understand it. Right. So it needs to be sort of a physical form. Right. That's why we created the sort of the GCash card. Right.
Yes. GCash the white one. Card. Is it the white one before?
It had white. Yes. There was a white version. And the white version even had sort of the beep capability.
Correct. And that was the currency you can only, I remember this, when you go to TGT, The only time, the only thing, say for example, I was a former Kickstarter investee, so I would partner up with Globe, and when we go to Globe, it's like, hey, I'm hungry.
That's right.
Okay, you can go to the cafeteria, 8th floor, but I forgot what it was. Mm. But said, all right, you need to have a GCash card because you cannot get anything if you didn't have a GCash card.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So we made it in physical form because that was the insight. I mean, people can't understand what, you know, virtual cash means, right?
Correct.
So I remember talking to many people about this, you know, and pitching GCash. And they would always tell me, yo, why would we need GCash? We have cash.
Look at you guys now.
Right? So that was the starting point. Mm-hmm. So we had to, you know, establish a lot of, you know, the scaffolding when you're building a building, right?
Correct.
We had to put up a lot of that. We had to establish distribution. For example, we had to obviously create a lot of these new different products, which, you know, we don't know which would stick or not, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of the sort of strategies or products that you see today, you know, were already sort of formulated back then. It was just a matter of time, right?
Yes, it was a timing thing all the while. But a couple of things. So this is where I really am super impressed with what you guys have built there. Because a lot of this, a lot of the stuff that we're enjoying now have been, you know, part of the vision all along, ever since. It's just, again, the right timing for it to turn. But I want to understand first, at the very, you know, essence of the job, Xavier, is to refresh and change the status quo.
Yeah.
When people are brought in to do changing of the guard and changing the status quo, that usually is a painful process. Mm. How were you able to get to change that mentality, mindset, and even the vision of how GCash was going to be?
Yeah. So I treated it like a startup, right? Mm. So it was a 0-1 moment, right? So
clean slate.
Yeah. Definitely. Despite obviously the quote unquote baggage,
right?
From the last several years, right? You know, we just talked to everyone and said, okay, this is sort of a new time, right? Mm-hmm. Even for the market, right? You see smartphone penetration starting to increase. Obviously, we were working on LTE, things like that. You can see the OTT over the top trends in the US, Europe, right? So it was just time. Mm-hmm. So we just implored the organization to try to capture that value that's being created in the market, right? We forget what's in the past, right? We create new things, new distribution, new products. Of course, you need to bring in new people as well, right?
Okay. Now, in terms of, you mentioned it, people, right? You can't do this alone. Even if you had the head of the snake and you saw the vision, you knew what to do. Who are the pivotal people that helped you really make this transformative and really get this done? Because again, a lot of the foundational stuff that we know GCash Ash, and I think the pandemic was really just the key. That was the timing that everybody needed for this to turn and to turn into reality. Right. You know, but all the foundational stuff that you said, so the scaffoldings, I would even call it trusses already, you know, that was there. Who are the people that were very pivotal in helping you lay this foundation for GCash right there?
Yeah, well, like, obviously we have to thank the whole Globe organization for that. Right.
Yep.
And especially Ernest, who's at the helm. But in terms of the team at GCash, right, I would say it's the product team and the tech team, right? Without them, we wouldn't have been able to create a lot of the new payment products, right? And number two, sales and distribution.
Of course. Right?
We sort of put the telco sales mentality into GCash, right? And what we would do is actually sell on the ground, talk to, let's say, college students, talk to gamers, right, in their own context, and then educate them about this new thing called the GCash card and what they can do with it, for example.
That's amazing. All right. Last question before we take our first break. Yep. So then GCash, I want to understand about your leadership style. Because again, startup mentality, build fast and break things type of thing, right? But how did that evolve then when you were, especially now you understand how it is to run a company .com style here in the Philippines. You did it in the US, M&A style. So now there's so much perspective that you brought in. But when you were the CEO of GCash, what was the leadership style that you implemented?
I would use the term inspiring and engaging, right? Because you had to paint a vision for the future that doesn't exist yet.
Yes. Right?
And then you have to work individually with the different groups, whether it's sales, whether it's product, whether it's, you know, customer service, communications, and even legal and compliance, because obviously fintech has this whole regulatory side of it.
Right.
So it's really sitting down with them and ironing out a lot of challenges on the ground, right? So even if you paint that very general picture and vision for everyone to follow, you still have to work individually. So I was very involved, right, in the many different teams.
I love it. All right. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will now talk about the rest of this career and how he was then getting to True Money, obviously. And of course, FDev and all the investment stuff that he's doing in Unlock Ventures and everything else. But we'll talk about that more after the break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from the break. We are still with, again, the heavy hitters starting out our anniversary season, Xavier Marzan of FDev, who then told us what was it like, building the foundation of GCash, because he was their CEO for 2014 to 2016. Again, very early days. I still remember that, those times being in Kickstart as an investee, really having that card in the bag. But again, a lot of what you built, the wallet, imagine GCash not having a wallet and it's in the pandemic. None of this stuff that was able to balloon that would not even work. Yeah. But again, you went from another fintech to another fintech. So that, walk me through this process, because here you go with True Money. The first time I found out about True Money, I remember this vividly. 2017 to 2018, I founded my second company. My first company failed. Partyfile invested on by Kickstarter and 500 startups. Lost everything. 2017, 2018, I created the very first chatbot development agency in the country called Chatbot PH. And I remember your guys in True Money inviting me over to your office across Podium.
Oh, forgot
the name of the building.
You were there.
Yep. And we were discussing chatbots as early as 2017, right? We weren't able to close it. I think you got a different vendor or you built it in-house. But you were already that clairvoyant about what that is. So walk me through that process. Why did you leave GCash or True Money?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things, right? The situations change. In GCash, that was already the time when the company was considering. So we helped the establish Mint, right?
Yes.
Mint was founded.
The parent company.
Our time, right? And the organization was already looking for outside investors, right? And obviously, Alipay.
Yes.
That was about to happen, right? And then at the same time, with obviously an Alipay coming in, and this was a very good thing for GCash, right? Because with the Alipay platform,
correct,
it would enable the company to do so much more things, right?
Makes sense.
But obviously, the organization would have to go through some years of migration.
Of course. Right?
So that was one instance. And the second thing is more of a personal choice on my part. Mm-hmm. Because being in GCash, to be honest, that was the only time when I realized that the Philippines is such an unbanked market, right? And
yes.
Up until today, obviously, we're still talking about it. But back then, when I started, it was 75% unbanked. Ooh. Right. Not even underbanked. I think the last several
years, nada.
Yeah. So it progressed, obviously, right? With the help of the e-wallets and the digital banks.
Right.
But back then we were talking about trying to serve this unbanked market. Right. But, but to be honest, GCash serves a lot of, ABC socioeconomic demographics, right? So I wanted to be there where we actually provided financial services to middle markets, you know, C, D, E segments, right? And where is that? It's in the rural areas, right?
Got it.
And it just so happens that one of the shareholders in Thailand before.
Yep.
So our shareholders in True Money were Thai.
Yep. The big conglomerate in Thailand.
Yes. Under the CP Group as well.
Correct.
So one of them came to the Philippines for a conference where I was speaking about financial inclusion, right? And
Makes sense.
Fact that we have to do so much more to actually achieve that. Right.
Correct.
And I was wearing the hat of GCash, that we still had to do a lot more things, right, to change the status quo. And then, he was saying, you know, we wanted to have some presence here in the Philippines, but we don't know what to do, right? So we started talking after that. I had to pitch. So it was like a startup idea. I had to pitch what kind of business should we be getting into here in the Philippines. And actually, Ron, the way that I did that was to take sort of our shareholders, right? And then drive them around unbanked areas.
What?
Yeah, because typically for any foreigner that's not familiar with the Philippines, all they would see is macroeconomic statistics, right? Like,
correct.
You know, majority unbanked market. That's it.
Right.
But when they come here, they would look at, okay, BGC, Makati, okay, that doesn't look too unbanked, right? So I had to...
That's a 25% right there.
Or less.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we had to tour them to many different areas, right? And I remember even going to Santa Rosa, Laguna, right? I mean, it's not close Nuvali. enough to mm-hmm. Metro Manila, right? And if you veer right, obviously it's Nuvali, very progressive.
Go left to Balibago.
But go there left, right? Go left. We actually saw, right, Ron, we saw a community of about 16,000 households.
What?
Right? And we also checked what the presence of financial services or quasi-banking presence is in that area, right? We only saw one. I think it was a Western Union or something
Or
else.
Pawn shops. That's all you're going
to
see.
Yeah, but there aren't even that many pawn shops to serve the 16,000 household community.
Correct.
Right? So they would all go to this one place, right? But in let's say, more advanced markets, the banking... the ratio of, let's say, bank presence to the population is single digits, right? I think it's 1 to 8 or 1 to 10. I'm not sure.
Got it.
Something like that. But here, you're talking about 1 to 16,000, right?
Makes sense.
So we showed them that, right? This is what we want or who we want to serve. And this is the context of the majority of the Philippines. Right.
And obviously, that pitch works. That pitch worked, right? But that's what I want to understand. So now you got in. It's another 0-to-1 thing, right?
Yeah.
You picked an office right across podium. There's really good food there too, by the way. I want to...
We actually... the office in podium was at the start.
Ah.
Even in the beginning, we even spent some months in a warehouse. Right.
What?
In somewhere in Pasig near C. Raimundo. Right. And we were there because an affiliate company of ours, which was doing e-commerce back then, had this warehouse and had an extra space. So we said, we'll start setting up shop there until we find an office. Right.
Got it. And I remember you guys from that point on during that stretch. You were just everywhere, putting Tito Boy in every place you can put Tito Boy.
right.
So walk me through that process going 0-to-1 again. Brand new startup, big conglomerate backing you, a whole market to take on. What was that like?
I guess it all starts with technology. Right. I really wanted to own the ability to iterate on the product. Because even if we had a hypothesis on what to offer the market and how, right? We knew that things would change in an instant. Right.
Okay.
So first thing that we did was build a product team, technology team, right? And start building sort of a core banking platform or a core wallet platform. And we did that in under 3 months' time, right? Credit to the team for that.
Amazing.
Right. And then, towards the end of that cycle, I started building out sort of distribution. Distribution meaning, we obviously had to identify specific locations, specific stores, saris.
Yep.
To work with, right?
Yep.
Which would be visible enough, right? And also have the operating cash to do what we wanted them to do, which is to offer all these quasi banking services, right? Because they had to offer anything from payments to, insurance, even lending in remittance.
They were your outlets, technically.
That's right. So we had to work with them very closely. And, I myself, right, I was on the field actually selling.
Wow.
Right. I was selling in Laguna. And then after we sort of established our network in Laguna, you'd see me selling in Pampanga, right, together with the salespeople. Because that was also how I got to know about the customer and our partner and what the insights are in order for us to serve them better and what would work for their customer, right?
And that's what a true startup founder does, right? If you're not willing to roll up your sleeves, be at the front lines, get to talk to your customers, it's going to be very hard for you to build a product because you cannot do that from from the back line, right? Yeah, you have to beat the front line and pave the way for everybody
else.
Exactly.
You can't do that from an ivory tower, right?
Nope, never. And again, dude, you painted the town orange. Every nook and cranny that I drove, I'm a field guy type of guy too. So I go to every spot. Either Tito Boy's face or the orange room when he was everywhere.
Yeah, there's a strategy behind that, right? It's visibility, right? Because even if you have thousands and thousands of locations, but people don't know where they are, you know, which was my experience in, you know, the previous fintech, then obviously you won't drum up business. Right.
Correct.
So we really wanted very high visibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of things I want to know before we move on to your next stint here. How big did you go in True Money? Because this was super fast as well. And then I want to understand, how did that also change you as a leader? Because hyper growth is scary, but people don't understand, like, oh my God, they're doing so well. They're growing so fast. But there's so much iterations from an organizational standpoint in order to keep that momentum going. It's not easy, and it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Yeah, I would actually call this the messy middle, right? Very messy. And in fact, during the first year, you know, all the potential partners we would talk to, including banks, wouldn't even talk to us, right?
Wow.
But after a year of building out a couple of thousand locations, right? They started to knock on our door, right?
Right.
But like, obviously that actually turned me from more of a strategic guy into more of an execution guy, right? Because sure, the vision is there in the beginning, but the journey from that point onwards, right, was all about executing. Right. So, and that includes, you know, getting people on board. Like, obviously we grew from 1 to 500 people, in a span of, I think 18 to 24 months. Right.
Oh, man.
So I would always, you know, sinasakal ko na nga yung HR, you know, like, what are the other creative ways we can, you know, do for, hiring faster, right? Because even if we're, you know, you're hiring fast, actually the sort of the negative thing from this is because you're moving so fast, not everyone can keep up, right?
Nope.
So unfortunately, you also have to think about the people that, you know, you have to let go out of the journey, out of this journey, right? That always pains me, right? But it's something that you also have to do as a leader, right? But you can be human about it, right?
Right. And no matter how much you've found out about it, both that okay, rule of 3 and 10, that, you know, systems break as you scale your businesses. Mm. Even if you had a heads up, nothing can prepare you for when you're already in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Right. Because
yeah.
you don't know what you don't know until you find out for yourself that, oh my God. And the one thing you can't do is slow down just because people can't keep up. Unfortunately, you know, you have to maintain momentum because momentum is precious. Not everybody gets it at all. And if you have it, you just need to, again, it's looking for that balance, when the balance cannot even be maintained. So I don't know how to get it done, because a lot of companies that have achieved scale, that I've had before here and in founders only, that's the common denominator over their problem. Mm-hmm. And that's also the leader's dilemma. No leader gets to scale without having to go through painful processes of things falling apart that, oh my God, I wish I had this guy still with me, but, you know, things fell apart, blah, blah, blah.
Very painful. Very painful. Mm. Right. That was probably one of the most stressful situations in my life. Right. Mm. I mean, we grew from essentially 0 to 7 million customers in that span of time. Right.
Amazing.
All of them were paying. Right. So it was extremely fast.
Correct.
You have to make your operations sort of aligned with that type of scale also, right? And, you know, things break every 2 weeks, every month, right? In fact, the way that we sell like changes every 2 weeks.
Oh my God, that's amazing. But okay, I'll have a bit of a personal question. How did you cope during this? I can just imagine. Okay. I have so many friends that have gone through this, especially the unicorns that have achieved, you know, hyper growth because every multiples of 30 to 100 to 150 to 200 people. Dude, that's a whole nother crazy stuff you have to deal with. Mm. And it takes a toll on them.
Yeah.
And every founder is unique in how they cope. How did you cope personally with these things? Because again, it's painful and you can't just detach and just say it's just a job. This is your baby. You created this from the start. How did you cope?
Yeah. I think, you know, my family, I have to thank my family and my wife for that. They've been extremely patient and accommodating, you know, not being able to see me in some weekends, right? Especially when there's a, you know, tech issue, right?
Yeah.
You know, going on, let's say, vacations. I remember going up one time to La Union and then I was driving and, you know, my CTO calls me up for this tech issue.
Oh, right? My God.
So I've had to, my wife and I...
All hands all of a sudden.
Yeah. So, I mean, that happens all the time. I didn't feel I had enough time for to celebrate Christmas also. Back then, but you know, we still had some quality time, a lot of quality time with my wife and kids, right? And they're obviously the inspiration for me in doing all these things, right?
Right. Sounds good. And again, you ran this for almost 4 years, 3 years and 10 months.
Yep.
But what was the final thing that you guys again? Because you can. Just like also every founder, eventually you'll realize that you will probably not the right guy anymore when you get to a certain point.
That's right.
That's finite.
Right.
Yeah. The fact there's no forever in startup, unfortunately.
That's right.
Okay. It's only the hustle that's forever. Mm. Unfortunately. Also, just like change. Mm-hmm. Right. But how did you decide it? Right. Maybe it's time for me to take on a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. Right. My personality is 0 to 1 and 1 to 100.
Got it.
You won't see me running, let's say, a fintech organization with 10 million customers or 50 million customers, right? That's not me, right? Get a brand manager from FMCG. Yeah, but if you want to create, right? If you want to disrupt, you know, business industry, right? You call on me, right?
And so, there you go.
When we hit, you know, when we had 500 people, when we had 7 million customers, when we were at 20, 25,000 points of presence all over the Philippines, right? So the job was, okay, what's the next set of strategies for the organization, right? And like, I would say, okay, now it's time for a different kind of CEO. Right, to lead this journey or the next phase of this journey, right?
Got it.
And then at the same time, my realization was all these years, right, working in the fintech space and working with the unbanked sector, my big realization was still, you know, a lot of these people were not only underserved from a banking or financial services standpoint. In fact, they are underserved in almost all aspects of their lives, right? Whether it's education and, you know, healthcare, even transportation, right? You know, the ability to, let's say, buy a house and finance it, content, etc. There's so much, right? So I said to myself, okay, I want to do something much broader than just fintech, right? And that led me to this whole idea of, you know, working in several different verticals at the same time and, you know, doing venture and, you know, exploring something that's closer to initially what I had intended to go back for, right?
Here. That's amazing.
And that actually led me to you know, partnering up with the Filmvest Group to create and launch FDEP, right? Which is the innovation and venture arm of the group.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And literally, this is right before the pandemic hit. And again, the Filinvest Group, they're everywhere. During the pandemic, I permanently moved here in the South. And of course, you can't go to the South into the Alabang area without basically that's Filinvest turf.
Right.
From festival everywhere, from Asian Hospital and everywhere, everything else. That's all Filinvest, right? And obviously up north, they're everywhere. The Gutianon family has done an amazing job. But again, you're right. They probably needed to transform and digitally transform a lot of their legacy businesses from East West Bank. I don't even know all the companies.
Yeah, we have 90 different operating companies, right? In many different verticals, obviously including what you mentioned, the bank, insurance, real estate, of course. We're into hotels, things like Crimson.
Right, Crimson. Quest,
right, that's part of the umbrella. Agriculture. Yeah, even infrastructure, power, all these things.
That's amazing.
Clark is part of the group's portfolio.
What? Again, just feeling this. Just see the logo. You can. I love driving around even in this annoying traffic, and you just see the logo everywhere as well. But again, before we take our last break, I'm pretty sure you had that conversation with the family or whatnot. And is it reminiscent of that conversation you had when True Money started out? But what was the different challenge this time?
Yes and no. Same and very different at the same time. So I think what's the same is you have a big ecosystem to work with, meaning you have the support of a big parent, right? What you wanted to accomplish.
Okay.
The difference, I would say, is my previous shareholders, they were probably more progressive in terms of how to adopt technology in their strategies, right? Whereas I think generally here in the Philippines, we're still lagging behind, right?
Yep.
So I think that is the big challenge.
That is amazing. All right, now let's circle the last break. And when we come back, we will now talk about the hustle behind FDEV and the type of stuff that this guy is already doing, especially what he did during the pandemic. And of course, also what he likes to do on the side when he's investing in other startups. Well, let's talk about that more after the break. Hey, Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh, payroll-starter-monthly-5K, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost.
Other app features include pay bills, the Uno virtual debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and loans. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay.
And we're back from the break. We are still with Xavier Mazzano that told us the amazing, amazing journey that he's done. Again, there's not a lot of people that have been here, and I'm glad you agreed to this, especially during our fifth anniversary season. Super perfect timing, right? But now we're in FDev, and you said that you know, with conglomerates, there's going to be a bit of resistance depending on what you're trying to innovate on, right? So a couple of things I wanted to know. Right, this happened. You got in pre-pandemic.
Yeah, actually,
and now
pandemic. Yeah, the year
during the pandemic.
Yep.
How did you even convince them? Because a lot of people, the typical move that I saw for big conglomerates is very few were prepared. A lot of them were shell shocked. So there's just analysis paralysis all of a sudden and panic in between. They're lucky they had you. What were the first steps you had to do during the pandemic when the infra probably didn't even exist?
No, so to be honest, it's still establishing the infrastructure, right? I think first year of the pandemic, it's still... Again, there wasn't any prior... There weren't a lot of prior digital initiatives.
Right? Yeah.
So it was still back to basics during the pandemic, right? So establishing the ability for online collaboration, right? Making sure that even if people are working from anywhere and everywhere, you're still secure, right? So a lot of foundational stuff. And like, obviously this was still the realm of IT, right?
Right. Well, what were the very first pivotal things that you guys invested on that really started to get the ball rolling?
I think if you look at how big conglomerates are responding to this call for innovation and transformation, right? I think the very first thing that you'll notice is they would put up VC funds, right? Yeah. Like CVCs, essentially.
Yes.
Right? So that was also sort of the first step that we wanted to talk about with the family. But after some months of discussion, we felt that it wasn't sort of the right strategy for the group. But what made sense was the group wanted to run after very specific tech-driven opportunities, right? In a lot of different areas, right? For example, in financing, in, you know, B2B, where we can leverage our ecosystem, etc. Do a sort of digital banking service, etc. So we help. So the very first sort of innovation-led strategy that we did for the group was to venture build, right? To establish.
That's why that's the model.
Yeah. So that was the model that we started with during the pandemic, right? Okay. And a lot of what we did were situated just outside or just adjacent the core businesses, right? The core
Makes
companies.
Sense.
So for example, with Como, we also helped sort of establish strategies market
right.
for Como, which is now the digital banking app of East West, right?
Yep.
So if you look at East West, obviously it's a lot of the business there is still driven from the stores, right? And we have right. one of the widest store networks.
Yep.
But then the organization also wanted to get more younger demographics, which are yes. attuned to obviously digital-based experiences.
You guys even advertised in my podcast at one point during the pandemic.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yes.
Yeah. So
there.
So very similarly, right? So we would work with a lot of the different operating companies, right, to sort of identify a business opportunity that is driven by digital. While during the pandemic, a lot of the foundational IT infrastructure and, you know, developing new digital channels were the focus of our core businesses.
Makes sense. Got it. So in that said, now that's really coming into to form, but mm-hmm. I want to understand. So venture building, if that's the model, right? And if a typical venture builder, say like the other venture builders that we've seen, there needs to be like venture partners or CEOs or founders per company.
Right, right.
Is that also the amount, the approach that you got? And what did you look right. for in these people that you'd hired mm-hmm. to create these companies in-house?
Yeah. So great, great question. So initially we started out with us internally in the team.
Okay.
As the sort of founders.
Okay.
Right. But towards sort of after a couple of years, we then started working and bringing in external founders, right? To work together with them to vet a certain business opportunity, venture opportunity, and then, you know, work with them to actually develop it. Right.
And what were these founders' backgrounds and what were they like when you got them into the fold?
Yeah. So we love people who already had tech backgrounds.
Okay.
Not necessarily engineers, right? But those right. who had exposure to, you know, let's say e-commerce or marketplaces or fintech, mm-hmm. etc. Because they would know how to get from zero to one, essentially, right? Because there's a lot of experimentation that needs to happen there. So you need a mm-hmm. certain profile for that. Mm-hmm. But we also value experience, right?
Right.
We wanted to make sure that they can cascade their learnings and know-how to a lot of younger people who are part of the different teams, right? Because you don't want to be in a situation where, let's say, you have a very young founder, then you have the blind leading the blind in a way, right?
So I've seen that so many times. Okay.
Yeah. So we valued the experience as well. And obviously part of it would be the ability to work with a large enterprise because
of course.
The key actually is to be able to leverage the ecosystem.
Exactly. You have a cheat code. You have the big conglomerate backing you up. Right. But that's also a balancing act because I've seen,
correct.
You know, there's going to be resistance from the old guard. Just there's going to be people and you have to navigate that through. You know, some people that their mindset would be like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay. why are you changing what is not broken?
Yeah.
Right. But you're going to have to reinvent yourself for the future because it's inevitable change will disrupt yourself. And it's better to disrupt it from the inside rather than outsider disrupting you out of business.
That's right.
Now, I want to understand now, from these things, what are these products that you guys are building on? Because now you have an ecosystem, a couple years under your belt.
Right, right.
And you are Professor X, okay? You have always done this before, 0 to 1, but now at a greater scale. What are these things that you're now building in?
So I guess to contextualize that further and to add more depth to that, Ron. Right?
Okay.
So after just building new digital ventures outside or adjacent to the core, right? What we're doing now is actually getting more, even more involved with the different operating companies and helping them produce new digital products, experiences, etc. Right.
So got it.
Like in the past year alone, for example, you know, we've probably started, you know, a dozen new projects, right? Different flavors from, you know, helping, let's say, the bank come up with a new, let's say, corporate solution that helps with, you know, business accounting. For example, right?
Got it.
We've sort of worked with our hospitality division to come up with this cloud kitchen service that leverages on hotel and like other kitchens that we have in the group to provide sort of like catering.
Like a big commissary.
Yeah,
like kind of thing.
Catering services for the group, et cetera. So, and even today we're exploring things that are related to Gen AI, right?
Love it.
So with a mindset of being able to reach out to more customers, being able to serve them better, right? And again, I'm not going to say anything specific to a particular company because we're working on like several different things at the same time.
Right. Right. But that again, that's the challenge there is once you already turn the corner, then it's just straight at that point. Right? You know, the hardest part is always the first few ones, getting all the nuts and bolts involved and get everybody to be on the same page.
Yep.
Well, once it's on, oh my God, this is going to be true money and GCash all over.
I think what's critical, Ron, in these types of transformation situations, especially with large enterprises, is this notion of a common language.
Yes.
Right? And people, because to be honest, transformation is all about people.
Correct. That's it. But at this stage, before we talk about your angel investing approach, right? What did you, I'm pretty sure this just made you so much better. What did you discover about yourself when you're now, you know, fighting or not fighting, pitching all these different business units and whatnot? Because you have to be very diverse and be patient to disrupt the status quo.
No, actually, it's patience, right? I've learned to be more patient.
Got it.
Well, when I started this role during the pandemic, I wanted decisions to happen immediately, right? And I wanted you know, once you have an idea, right, you wanted to see it out in the market next month, right? You have the internal team develop it, and then you see it already. Outside so that you can, you know, start experimenting, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that the experimentation is internal, right? Mm-hmm. To try to figure out like how you can actually educate and sell the concept of innovation and transformation, you know, this new product that you experience, et cetera.
Right? Makes a lot of sense. Now, all right, let's switch it up to your angel investing hat, all right? So while all of these are happening, you're obviously angel investing, but let's look at it from a macroscopic point of view first, right? You've seen it all, you've done it all pretty much, right? But what are the, looking at this Philippine startup ecosystem now,
right?
What are the opportunities that you see in the market? Because again, there's not a lack of fintech plays out here, there's a shit ton of them, right? And it's a good thing, not saying it's a bad thing, but what's your opinion now in 2024 startup ecosystem from your point of view?
So let me touch on that a couple of different ways, right?
Okay.
I guess the first lens is the types of startups and in which sort of spaces or opportunities. So I still think that despite the funding winter and the sort of the startup tech winter that we're experiencing today, mm-hmm. I think there's still a massive amount of startup and innovation opportunity.
Absolutely.
That's existing, right? And I would love to see more founders work on really hard problems and yep. infrastructure problems, right? And what I mean by that, for example, in fintech, right? The last several years, we've seen a plethora of payments companies, right? We've seen yep. a lot of lending companies, right? But not a lot of, let's say, open finance players, mm-hmm. right? Working on making sort of money movements, transfers, right? And data across several different parts of the ecosystem, including banks, of course.
Right.
And making those more valuable to the different sort of stakeholders in the ecosystem. Right. Because if you look at markets like Thailand and Indonesia, right, their markets are much more open and there's yeah. a lot more startups working on infrastructure, right? Enabling better payments, enabling better credit scoring, right? Et cetera. And I think we need that here in the Philippines, right? I mean, that's just in the fintech space. The other thing is I want to see more B2B players.
Yes.
I think if you look at the map of, again, I'll refer to fintech, right? If you look at the map of fintech in the Philippines, mm-hmm. the last several years, majority of it are still B2C players.
Yes.
Right? Yep. But if you think about it, businesses, right? And you have 99.something% who are MSMEs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones who need help from a financial services standpoint, from a financing standpoint, from an operating efficiency standpoint, in order to compete better in this more global and regional market, right? So we want to see more of those players as well.
Now, for those startup founders or startups that you've seen has promise, of course, you've written a few checks. Up to you if you want to share which ones and whatnot. But what are the common denominators over the startup founders that you feel are investable, especially if you're going to cut them your own angel check?
Yeah, so I think number one is their experience, right? What
pedigree.
Have they gone through, right, that would make their current startup more successful or have the higher probability of becoming a success, right?
Mm.
Because if you're a first-time startup founder, right, you're very ambitious, obviously, but like I really question what learnings you've had, right? Unless, you've had a difficult, life journey so far and you've been able to cope with it, right?
Mm.
Overcome any hurdle in front yeah. of you, right? I think that's important, right? What's your ability to hurdle hardship, right?
Yep.
And to me, that measure is, okay, have you done a startup before?
Correct.
Right? So
did you quit after you get punched in the face of the first time?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
whatnot? Or correct. How many times did you get back up?
Correct, right? Correct. It's always yeah. this notion of iteration. Right.
Correct.
I don't care if you failed. I don't care if you made this mistake before. Right. Mm-hmm. But what did you do after that?
Correct.
I think that's extremely critical. And I think the other aspect that I look at is, especially for a tech company, obviously you need to have a tech founder if you're not one yourself. I mean, a technical correct. Founder.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've met a lot of, first-time founders or even experienced entrepreneurs, right, who are getting into the tech startup world. And the first question that I ask them, who's developing? Oh, I outsource it to this
yeah.
company, right? I think you need to own your tech, your
IP.
Product,
yep.
right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to have the ability to iterate it into whatever that can work, right?
Exactly.
So if you don't have the tech capability in-house, right, then how are you going to do this whole journey itself?
Exactly. That's amazing. But is there any other intangible that you also see? A common denominator over, is there any vertical you do like investing in? Or is it because of, say, your experience in fintech and whatnot? Yep. What is that like?
Yeah. So I have the philosophy of not investing in things you don't understand. Right.
Makes sense.
So I know how to make fintech work. Right.
Yeah.
So I would invest a lot in fintech. Right. Mm-hmm. I would take a look at companies in fintech, locally, globally, et cetera. B2B as well. I've had a lot of experience there and I'm quite familiar with, that space and how, you know, in Southeast Asia, actually, right? There aren't a lot of, let's say, SaaS founders or SaaS investors, right? A lot of the B2B and SaaS investors are still coming from, let's say, the US, right?
Yes.
So there have been very few companies here in the region that are truly B2B, right? And, you know, I have some of them as part of my close network, so I can reach out to them as well to learn more about, you know, a certain business model, et cetera.
Right, right.
So I'm comfortable investing in that as well.
Yep.
Right? And I guess third is because of my own experience with FDev, right, and working in several different verticals, industry verticals, and seeing how legacy businesses can in fact be transformed by digital, right? So that's also one sort of area that I'm looking at, which is the digitalization of industries.
Right. That's amazing. Okay. Now, at the end of the day, right, you're looking at all this experience, and that experience that Xavier has just really says how much value add you get as a founder if he gets to invest in you, especially if it's in these verticals. But typically, I wanna ask Xavier, what's the advice you typically give to founders that you decide to invest on, or if not even decide to invest on, but those ones that you know that you like, you admire, but even if you don't cut a check, you're rooting for them.
Yeah. So two things, right? I mean, number one is get a tech co-founder.
Yes. Don't get fleeced, please. Don't go. Yeah,
or you know, I tell them to like come back once they have a tech team.
Yep.
Etc. And then the second is very simple. Talk to your customer, right? Because I've always encountered pitches and founders who talk about problems in a very general manner. Right. You know exactly who to invest in if the founder has many stories about their conversations or interactions with would-be customers or prospects. Like in fact, that's the only thing as a founder that you need to be able to do early on, which is to keep on talking to customers and then getting those insights and then putting it into your product, right? Anything else, right? And my theory is that will eventually lead to more revenues, right?
Absolutely.
If you solve somebody's problems, they will gladly pay for it, right? Or they will have nightmares if they lose you as their partner, right? So I would say that should be their focus. That's where they should spend majority of their time in. To be honest, I don't believe in joining, you know, accelerator programs or, you know, hackathons at the stage where you have a product and you're trying to get some traction, right? I think the only thing that you need to be doing is talking to customers and then developing
to customers. Yep. Right. And if you can get a sale out of that too, why the hell not?
Of
right.
Course.
At the end of it, you're already there. That's an opportunity. It's a lead. Get some money. If you can get them to pay you and talk to you at the same time, that's the best way to get it done. But Xavier, before I let you go, right? Through all this this illustrious career that you've had, I'm pretty sure you had a lot of mentors that helped you along the way. Just top of mind, what is the best advice that you've received that you still carry along with you in your whole career?
Well, I go back to when I came back here to the Philippines, right?
Yeah.
And you know, being able to have the opportunity to work with this guy, Peter Vithos, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's
CEO of Seek FYI, by the way.
Yes, exactly. So he always tells me to get the right people on the bus, right? So it's all about the people. And then at the same time, he's also one of the very few people who I've met who is extremely strategic, right? He was also ex-consultant in a prior life, right? But at the same time, he can out-execute everybody else.
I love it.
So I think for any successful founder, CEO, right? You need to have both, right? To be honest, I myself started out as a more strategic only person, but throughout the course of the 10 years, right? And when I first met Peter Vithos, I said, I want to be like him. I also want to be able to out execute everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, after this journey, the past decade, right, I can also say I can out-execute anyone else. Right?
That is amazing. What an amazing episode to start our anniversary season. I'm super duper honored, Xavier, that you joined us in your amazing hustle. But before I let you go, if people want to work with you, work under you in FDeb, where do they go and how do they do that?
Yeah, they should just go to my LinkedIn and just shoot me a message. Yeah, I'll gladly respond.
There you go. Yes, he is one of them nice peeps that actually respond when you message him. But before I let you go, Xavier, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to, in any type of podcast app you're listening to. And again, if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on hustleshare.com. And again, big shout out to our premium supporters like Angelo Lee, Gab Abbott, and all the other brands that support us to keep doing great content like this for 5 years on now. Oh my God, I've been on your ear for a very long time.
Wow, congratulations.
And again, if you want to join them, thank you so much. Please do check it out and support us at premium.hustleshare.com. Again, Xavier, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
All right, I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.